We have a Patreon if you enjoyed this podcast. If you want to throw us a dollar to get access to all of our bonus pods, you can do that. And I will say, and maybe I'll put this up top. We lowered our payments to a dollar, and that meant that people are not getting charged $3 anymore, which means we like lost half of our Patreon.
So I assumed that it would keep everyone at three. It would just, that's bizarre.
I did not do that. So, hey, if you were comfortable at three, if you want to change it again, that'd be great. Or tell your friends, share the show, share the pod.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that number hurts to look
at. Oh, wow. That's so wild.
Yeah.
To the Safe Room, a survival horror game club podcast. I'm Grace, and with me is my co-host, Rose.
You're hated here.
Damn, I just got off the train, though. I didn't do anything except kill three guys.
Yeah, I had an out-of-body experience where I killed three guys.
Yeah. And then I had a dream about killing them again.
And a kid in a doll costume went, "Hey, you don't have to kill guys." What if you didn't kill guys?
What if you didn't do that? Yeah. Fuck.
Pathologic 2.
Yeah. Rose, I fucking adore this game. We're going to talk about it. We're going to get down to brass tacks. We're going to move all the way through this game. In many ways, but I love this thing to pieces. There's not a lot about it I don't like, and I think that maybe differs from your perspective a little, but I'm...
This is a great game. I fucking hate it.
Totally. Valid. Understandable.
I would say there's a good... Of the, like, 40 hours I've spent playing this game, there's a good 10 hours or so that's probably the best thing we've ever played for this.
Sure, yeah.
And then the hours around it is just a self-hatred hours, I guess.
Yeah,
I
think it is, like... I mean, we'll talk about... Because I had... I think a significantly breezier time around this time. Just because I think I knew, like, there were things that there were plenty that I had forgotten, but I sort of knew my ways around the systems such. And also I kind of let myself use guides and cheat a little bit more. You know, but yeah, I'm looking it up. I'm booting up the game because I really want to remember, because the numbers tell the tale here.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Cause I first played this game in 2020. I wrote about it a couple times around then, and I died 46 times playing that one.
Yeah.
When I played it this time around, so I finished it 2 days ago, I died 16 times.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like 31 less times I died. And also, you know, you lose health every time. I mean, not every time you die, but most times you die, you get all these restrictions. Stuff gets worse and harder and weirder, you know? And yep. I did not see the end of that cycle the way that I did the first time I played it. So, you know. So, yeah. So I think that's like part of it. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I made the mistake of playing this on an Xbox.
Yes.
Hey, don't do that. Don't do that.
Yeah.
I played on a PC.
I remember I did boot it for like an hour on Xbox. I think it was on Game Pass when it launched.
It was at Game Pass at one point. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I played it a little bit on there and I was like, this is not the way to do this.
Fuck. So, oh, okay. That's cool. So, I quit on day 8 because mm-hmm. I just was in a death spiral and didn't really have the patience to get out of it at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But I took the deal.
Right.
So the game doesn't tell me how many deaths I had.
Oh, sure.
Zero deaths.
Because it doesn't matter. Yeah.
Yep.
I do think about that a lot. So for context, there's sort of a... I guess let's summarize this game and then we can talk about the deal because I think that's like an interesting illustrative thing for the game sort of logic. So,
okay.
Basically, this is a sequel to Pathologic 1, which came out like a decade, 15 years before. It's like, I don't remember when.
2005, actually.
2005, yeah. So like 15, you know, because Pathologic 2 is 2019. Anyway, yeah, May 23rd, 2019. And, in that game, you can play as 3 different characters, and in this one, you can play as 1, and the intention was to release, like, expansions, basically, that would allow you to play as the other characters, and that has turned into now Pathologic 3.
Which looks wild to me.
Yeah.
After playing this game.
So in this game you play as Artemy Baruch, who is a surgeon. His father was the town doctor in this unnamed town on the Russian steppe. He returns home from medical school to find that his father is dead, and shortly thereafter the town is subsumed in a plague that his father somehow bested 5 years prior under mysterious circumstances. And the game is basically about you, Artemy, trying to figure out how to fix the plague and trying to like stave off the plague in all the people that have it and, you know, all the stuff that's going on there. While dealing with like all sorts of political bullshit, you know, and various things that occur to you. You have a limited amount of time in the day. You have to eat, you have to drink. You can get infected if you're staying in infected districts for too long. You know, you can stave off infection with clothes, but clothes degrade over time the longer you spend in infected spaces, etc., etc., etc. You can trade for items with people, and a lot of the game is about like kind of knowing the economics of like what townspeople have what items and learning how that stuff works and learning how to trade with people and dealing with these kinds of things. And that's that. Basically. So, and then with every death, you get talked to by a kind of weirdo little man who's a theater guy, and he's like, every time you die, you're going to be punished. So most of the time you lose some health. Sometimes there are narrative complications. And then also you can... Yeah, I think those are basically the two things. I think there was something else I was going to say, but I don't remember. But basically, upon one death, you meet, like, there's this companion character is with you at the very beginning of the game, on the train home, who kind of shows up in various places. Like, he runs this shop that's only open at night and stuff. And basically, he's like, hey, if you let me do something, I will make it so death has no more consequences. And in fact, the prior consequences will be erased. But it means that something bad, or like, you'll lose something. Something later is going to happen and you won't, you know. And I just think that's really, the thing about that that's really interesting to me is the idea of playing the game where you just are, you can run a combat encounter as many times as you want. Is wild to me. That completely alters, like, the way it feels to play, you know? Like, yeah. So, anyway, sorry. I don't know if I have more thoughts about that, but I want to give you room to speak, especially about your experiences that you did that, and then also we're still dying too much. You know?
Yeah, I regretted doing that because I didn't know what it did. And then I looked it up and I was like, oh, well, shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's sans Undertale's you. It marks it on your save and you can't undo it.
Yeah. So, well, it's also like how the death works is that you, when you die, it like, you have like a profile and all your saves are under that profile. And so it marks the death on your profile. So yeah. Even if you go back three saves before you died, like, you still have the health debuff, you know, or whatever, right? You can't escape the toll that each death has taken on you.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, cool. I'll at least be able to finish the game. And then I couldn't even do that because I didn't have any, have enough resources to survive, too busy like prioritizing doing quests and not taking time out to like make potions and
right,
all that stuff that you can craft to stave off the plague. Yeah, and then I couldn't finish the game. Which is why I regret playing it on console, because if I had a PC, or, you know, I have a PC, but if I played it on that, I would have just been able to pull up a command prompt and just get through it. But
right, hello. Yeah, totally.
I did try to, I did start another playthrough on PC, but I was like, this game is too long.
Yeah. Well, it's also, there's some, I mean, I'd be curious about like what speedrunning looks like, but there's some measure of like hard coded length because each day takes a certain amount of time and you can sleep, you know, and stuff. But and maybe that's what speedrunning is. It's just like mostly sleeping and then running around, you know. But yeah.
But yeah, so. And then I just watched the rest of the game, all the like major events and character moments. Yeah, I think I like the game a lot. There are things about it that I don't like. just as a player of video games, I don't like meters.
Sure, yeah.
I did end up liking how it was handled here. I think the tension of just like needing to take care of yourself or needing to balance taking care of yourself and then taking care of others is like really cool as like a mechanic. I also am like thematically, the idea of just like you went to school to be a doctor and this is what you are. But at the end of the day, you're still mortal. And you, like all of these people, like could die or could not die depending on just your bandwidth as a human being.
Yeah,
totally. That this is what your role is, or this is what you decided to do with your life. You can't always make good on what you want to do just by consequence of being a human being.
Yeah.
That like push and pull was like really fascinating to me.
Yeah. Well, I think it's also so, because so much of the thematic stuff is about inheritance, that Burak's, father is like this beloved doctor who also, has a complicated past. There's some stuff going on with him that you find out like as the game goes on. And then also, so there's some level of him being like, am I my father's son? Do I want to be my father's son? Do I want to like become the town doctor? Is this like my future? And then that also ties into like him being part kin, which are like these indigenous peoples of the steppe and also like mythical creatures. There's like these big worm guys who pilot the boats around town. There's other guys. There's the herb brides, but those are just humans that have a certain role. And so there's also a question of like, am I part of these people? Do I want to be part of these people? What does it mean to be part of these people? What does it mean to lead them? Am I chosen, by them? Or like, are they choosing me out of convenience? There's a bunch of different things there with that. And so, I just think that's the thing, is part of it is like, there is a sense of being thrown into the situation and then having to like make do with what's around you. But you don't, there's a sort of central thing where you don't have a lot of agency and it's very reactive, The plague is the one calling the shots in a lot of ways. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that has an interesting dimension to it.
Yeah. I think my tension with this game, like playing it, is like, I just think the writing's really fucking good.
Yeah.
And I can kind of take or leave the survival stuff. In my like perfect world of my Plutonic ideal of this game is like, the survival stuff is cool and I get what it's doing and I, and like, it's interesting.
Yeah.
But I wish there was a version of this game that I could just read because it's just really good.
Yeah.
And I think that's where my frustrations around the way this game is framed comes in.
Yeah.
Because like the whole thing is like you're an actor playing this role. And Mark Immortal is God or whatever. I don't really understand what the point is.
Of that stuff specifically, or like...
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really interesting that there's so much like theater stuff is kind of important. Like, is even the sort of figures that are on like the cover art, or I guess no, those are the worms, I guess.
It's different on Steam, I think.
Yeah. Because on Steam you have the like reflections that are sort of like these theater people, wearing like these masks and stuff. I think a lot of that is, it's very. And I'm sure there's other stuff this is pulling on. Like, this is part of it is I don't know that much about like Russian theater. I don't know what this might be, but it feels very Brecht to me. The sort of like calling attention to the artifice of it, wanting you to think about that and then pulling on this stuff. Like, there's sort of a way that it draws out some of the more existential themes of the thing because there's something so contained and arbitrary, you know? What do you think about, like, I think specifically with the framing, like, the game opens on basically, like, a bad timeline that the town is going to get razed and you can't stop it. And that's not like, a possible end state, I think, in the actual game.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
Which I was surprised by, actually.
Yeah.
But I don't know what to think of it.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much I should be taking literally versus what is just metaphorical. Like, am I supposed to think, like, nothing in the game is actually happening?
Right.
Because there is that aspect, because whenever you get a bad ending, you go and the bachelor is there, like, rehearsing his lines.
Really funny. Uh-huh. Yeah.
But, yeah, how much am I supposed to take as this is just all, like, performance art, and how much of it is real? Because, like, if it's not real, if it's like there's no grounding for it, then I don't know how to take the rest of the story.
Yeah.
If it doesn't matter, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's kind of part of the thing of, like, the game. It is sort of like, I mean, it's interesting because it doesn't use any of this, you know, it's not a Bioshock Infinite. I guess Bioshock Infinite doesn't really use game language either. But, like, the meta stuff is so video gamey, whereas this is so, like, it has echoes of that stuff. Like, there's that part in the very end of the game where you meet, like, the other Artemy, or the other guy who calls himself Artemy.
Yeah.
You know? I think part of it is that there is this, like, it is fake because you're playing a video game.
Yes.
You know, right? The whole scenario is not real.
Totally.
But there is this kind of, I think, again, it's supposed to feel like, but is real life also that way? You know, like, I sort of like the thing where, was it Mark Immortal? What was this guy's name? I'm forgetting.
Yeah.
But he, cause he's like, he talks to you when you die as if you're like a new person, you know, as if you're like every time you die, it's like a new actor comes in to play the role. Right. Mm-hmm. And you can be like, that's bullshit. Right. Like, especially later in the game, you can be like, no, there's only one of me. And I remember everything that happened before. And, you know, so I think there is some question about, like, what is the mechanism here? How much of this is literally just kind of fictionalized or sort of, yeah, broad, you know, but I think it's intended to kind of draw to heighten the games, because it's a game obviously that deals extremely readily with death, and what death might mean. And there's sort of a, you know, at the ending, either any of the outcomes you choose have death as a consequence, right? Like, something dies because of what you do. And so I think that's, like, the artificiality of it is meant to, I think, I mean, I read it as kind of like highlighting or sort of emphasizing those elements of it, because sometimes life itself can feel fleeting and immaterial and strange and totally arbitrary, you know? Mm-hmm.
There's also a question of, like, what is Mark Immortal's end goal? Because, like,
right.
You get to the ending and he's like, I mean, that could have been better. Maybe we'll get somebody else next time.
Yeah.
Maybe we up the drama a little bit. I'm like, dog, what? You're never happy. What the fuck?
Yeah, totally.
So, like, what is his end goal? Does he just want to kill actors every day, all day?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, and that's sort of, I think, the thing of, like, he treats you so callously, you know, and antagonistically almost, you know, and that sort of gives you, there's some degree of like the way Artemis plays off of him too, that's like, you can sort of be like, damn, yeah, like you right, or you can be like, fuck you, man. You know, yeah. Like, what the hell? Like, I love that one of the deaths, you could like get into a rolling dragon fight with him and be like, why are you punishing me for dying if you don't want me to die? Like, if you make it easier for me to die, I will die more, stupid. Like, fuck you. You know? Like, I think that that, yeah, I think that stuff is interesting. I mean, it's just, oh, there's so much to talk about. I know we say this on that show all the time, but this is truly a video game with some thorny stuff in it.
Yeah.
And I think that is part of it, is that it is also like the fact that the deaths stay, you know, it gives you some level of like, you can't, sorry, I completely lost track of my thoughts, but it's like, I think there's some level of, I don't remember, I lost it, I'm sorry. It's gone.
Yeah, I just know that if I ever see Mark Immortal in real life, it's on site.
Yeah, I mean, it's fair. I think that's, you know, like a legitimate reaction to have, you know? Yeah, totally.
He's the shitty guy at the bar who will play some fucking Broadway bullshit at karaoke.
Yeah!
What an asshole.
Totally. Totally. Yeah.
Anyway, trying to think of what the fuck to talk about, because this game is massive.
It's so big.
You roll into town and everybody wants to fucking kill you.
Yeah. Well, because your dad died, you know, and he's beloved, and people think he was murdered. I mean, and correctly believe he was murdered. He was murdered. And then, so you kind of have to hide out. Like, I think there's multiple ways you can do this. Because it does have, like, a reputation system. Mm-hmm. And so, like, what I did is I went to Laura's house, Laura Ravel, who's, like, your childhood friend. And then she, like, vouches for you. And so then in, like, the three districts around our house, you can move freely. Because she's, like, you know. And then eventually it sort of becomes clear that, like, you didn't do it. Right, that you weren't here in time.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, this game is just full of moments with the reputation system where you're just trying to go to place to place.
Yeah.
And then you just hear a guy go, there you are.
Yeah, fuck you. Well, yeah, it's also because, like, that'll happen like at night, especially in, so another gameplay note is that when districts get infected and then they're, you know, infected for a time and then the next day they're like barren, and so there's like less, you can't find like water barrels there as easily, and also there's like vagabonds who are looting houses and stuff, and so, like, especially at night, it can be, like, dangerous just to be walking around in some areas of the town, right? Because there's people who will just, regardless of what your reputation is, will attack you, right? So, and that's also, like, the thing in that first part of the game is, like, you spend, like, 4 hours in town, and by the end of the fourth hour, it's, like, random guys will just look at you and be like, oh, it's go time. Yeah. You know,
there was a moment in my game where I was in a district with the children.
Yeah.
And my reputation was really good, but I was like barely fighting to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And then I walk outside to like get food with the little life I have left.
Mm-hmm.
And a guy goes, there you are.
Oh, shit.
And I'm like, what the fuck?
Oh, no.
And then I go into the kid's hideout, And they're like, hey, did you meet that guy that was like an assassin guy? And I,
oh my God.
And Artemis just like, you sent an assassin after me? Why'd you do that?
Yeah, the kids are so funny. Cause like there's that, I got a quest where if you like look at the, cause they have like caches hidden around. Basically the children in this town have like a child mafia kind of like a secret society. And so they like have these caches around and you can go, you know, find them. They're like drinking like a drink will like show you where they are on the map and you can go get them. And sometimes it's like the children also have like a cure for the plague that you can sometimes find in these. So sometimes it's like advantageous to look for stuff. There's like a thing in there where they're like, oh, we found the murderer of the, you know, of Artemis' dad. And you're like, oh shit, I should go there. Check that out. And then you go there and it's just like some guy who stole some shit from them who they wanted you to kill or something. And then you like go back to them and you're like, what the hell, bro? And they're like, you wouldn't have gone if it was like some guy that like had killed someone else. It's like, well, maybe I would have, like, whatever. Like that thing of like a quest telling you what it is and then you going and then it being like, well, actually, it's this other thing that you didn't know, you know, like there's so much playing with like limited knowledge that you have. And that's part of why I think the game does play differently once you have like a grounding in it, you know. But it's still full of stuff like that. And it's obviously difficult to like keep track of what is and what is not bullshit, you know?
Yeah.
Like there's that, there's that bit early on where, so you have three childhood friends in the city. One of them is Laura. The other one's Bad Grief, who I interacted a lot this playthrough. And there's a third one whose name I've forgotten because I didn't talk with him that much. Where are you? I have all the character names. Stanislav Rubin. Anyway, but Bad Grief's like, he's like a criminal guy, runs like a thieves guild kind of. And he like, hey, you have to go do surgery on one of our guys who got hurt. But the game doesn't really tutorialize like the way the surgery minigame works. And so it's very, cause like because the interface is based around. So basically, Rose talked about potions earlier. You make potions with herbs, but you can make potions that like treat the plague with herbs and infected organs. So part of the game later on becomes like doing autopsies on dead bodies, getting infected organs, and using those to like make tinctures that can, you know, treat stuff, right? But you don't necessarily know that day one, and so it's very easy to like pull an organ out of somebody, and then this is what happened to me in my first playthrough, and the guy's like, "What the hell? You took his liver." What is wrong with you? Like, why the fuck did you do that? And you're like, I didn't know that I was doing that. Like, but then there's a guy who like comes and visits you and like buys organs. And so you can like use that to get cash in the first day when it's like really difficult to make money. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like things like that where things that seem like mistakes might lead you down a weird path and get you somewhere that you wouldn't get otherwise, or, you know, things like that. And that's cool.
Yeah. I like the guy who has the gun and he's just like, I'm going to fuck off one day, but while I'm here, you can buy a gun from me if you have like $3,000.
Yeah.
I was not able to do that.
Yeah,
just gone.
I really prioritized it this time because I didn't have, like, I don't think I ever got a gun in my original playthrough, and I was like, I gotta get one. Yeah, because I also don't know, like, there's a way you can get pistol late in the game.
There's a shotgun in this game.
Yeah, I got the shotgun. I fucking got the shotgun. There's a quest you can do for Bad Grief on like day 10 where you like kill the guy who's become the de facto criminal leader, and then he gives you a shotgun.
Right.
And then I didn't have trouble in any of the combat the rest of the game because I could just shoot a guy.
Bad Grief going to the church and having an existential crisis is so funny.
It's so good. Well, because that's
This is the part where I'm like, the moment I didn't have to worry about playing the game, I'm like, great, I can just read this game.
Yeah, totally.
And Bad Grief being summoned, because Bad Grief died in my game.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So Bad Grief being summoned by the Inquisitor, and he's just like, I don't know, man, some of the shit she was saying really got me thinking, man.
Yeah.
And Artemis just like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Well, I love that you could also be like go to the Inquisitor and be like, what are you doing to him?
What did you say to him?
like what the hell, ma'am? What is up with you?
So funny.
You gotta leave him alone. Yeah.
Did you do the falling in love with the Inquisitor?
No, I mean, I guess I did because I got that like line of thing, but I kind of wanted to run off with her because there's an achievement for it. And
I watched that scene.
Right.
Because, you could, she's just like, let's just go. Let's just get out of here. Let's just go.
Yeah.
And he can be like, all right, sure. Because the Inquisitor is madly in love with you for some reason. Mm-hmm. And so you get on the train.
Well, I think Artemis kind of can be kind of confused by it too, where you can be like, we've talked like 3 times. You know? Like, I don't know what's going on with you.
But yeah, so you just go, and then the train stops, and then she just gets shot, and then the army is just like, all right, you can walk back.
Yeah.
You can walk back to town.
Oh.
You're just like, all right.
God. Yeah. Well, I think she dies. I think you can like find her body next to the town hall, and you can loot a pistol off of it. And that's like one of the ways you can get a weapon at the end of the game.
Got it.
But yeah, it's I'm just trying to remember what I had to, because there's a lot of like, I read a thing on Wikipedia, I think, that said it takes place during the Russian Civil War, but it's not really stated. But there is a lot of like the military has this like big internal conflict after they show up, right? The Inquisitor is like at odds with the military generally, and that's part of why she wants to leave, is she's frightened. I mean, correctly, that the military is going to kill her, right? So there's also some sense of like kind of going along with what you talked about, like being a doctor. There's a thing of like going somewhere. I mean, there's someone who should show up and is supposed to be in charge, and either they betray you in some way or they're dealing with their own shit and can't really help you. Mm-hmm. Right. And that stuff is like, you know, there's sort of a bracing quality to that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The peril.
Yeah, there's a real sense of like, this person is going to come into this world that I've inhabited for like 6 days, and now they're in charge, and that
right
sucks.
Yeah, totally. I mean, there's a lot of stuff about kind of inside outside. I mean, because like the kin and the town operate in that way, but then also there's like the Inquisitor, like the military, the, you know, yourself, who's been gone for, you know, years, right? Who has not been around at all, and your friends have changed, and like Reuben fucking hates you, and you don't really know why, like you don't really know what happened, you know, to make him hate you, and that kind of stuff of like, this is a world that you have to learn how to understand again, right?
It is actually pretty clear that he's just jealous that you're Isidore's son,
Right, right, right. Yeah, totally.
despite not being in the town for however many years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's right. You're totally right. Because again, yeah, I interacted with him more because he's like doing something, trying to cure the plague somehow. There's like a few side quests with him.
Yeah, and there's like a secret, there's a secret espionage game happening over on his corner of the world. Where he's like dissecting a body and the kin are just like, hey, this guy's doing some fucked up shit. We're probably gonna kill him. Or like do something that causes death.
Right.
And you can kill the kin to protect Reuben.
Right.
Which I did. Because I was curious. But yeah, you like team up. You can like team up with Reuben to make a cure.
Like yeah. One
way to get a cure.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Because I really went in on kin stuff this time.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I went to the kin village and got the panacea there. And then I think he didn't die because of that. Like, I don't know.
Mm.
But maybe not. Because he like the last time I saw him, he was like super like dead tired in his house. And I was like, wow, you're sleepy. And then.
So how did you get the cure?
So I didn't try all of the organs. Like, I think I didn't get an infected brain.
Right.
So eventually it just drops out and you're like, I need to get like a like half man, half bull creature to get the cure.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how would you even do that. And then you're sort of like, well, maybe there's a clue back at the old village. And you go there and there's like a like well kind of structure. It's like stone.
Huh.
And there's a bunch of the blood in it, like the Earth's blood that cures the plague. And so you get two vials of it that you can then brew two panaceas with. And cure people with. So I used one on myself after getting infected through Murky's side quest, which we'll, I think, talk about.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you have to... Because I went to the village at some point.
Because mm-hmm.
I was just like, what's over there?
Right.
There's a whole place over there. What's going on?
Yeah.
But I never saw that. And also, my game... just felt like it wasn't ready for me to go to the village because when I went to the village the first time, it had like debug, like a name of map _ character name.
Wow, that's wild.
I was like, that's weird. And then it fixed itself. So I don't know what happened, but I went there once and there was nothing there. And then I eventually went back when you meet a certain character.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Right. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah, it's interesting that there are multiple ways to get a cure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, for sure. Well, also it's interesting that like there's sort of a there's the Smouters, the child's cure, and nobody's like trying to figure that out for some reason. that's just like there, you know.
I had zero idea what the dead item village was or a dead item shop was.
Yeah, so basically it's like the dead item shop's cool,
which is pretty important actually.
Yeah, it kind of is. it really helps soften the economy of the game because basically what it is you can trade otherwise useless items. Like when you use, I forget what it's called, but like morphine, there's like a little glass vial in it that breaks. And then that is like an item. And there's like broken scissors are an item. Like bloody bandages are an item. Things like that, right? That you can just find out in the world or that you get through using something. And you can trade those items for like useful things at the dead item shop, right? Mm-hmm. And it's also a place where you can buy the military coupons before they show up. Which is fun because he's like, hey, these are some things some candy wrappers that I have. And they might be worth something later. But they might not be. Why don't you just buy some and see? And you're like, I don't know. But yeah, you have to go to the theater and watch the like theater thing to get the location of the dead item shop for that night. Although you can just go there if you already know what it is. It's always the same place. It's not like generated in any way. So that was like something where it's like a couple times, like I would kind of try to go to the theater because I was like, I don't just want to look it up. But then if I knew where it was, because I had gone to the theater and then like died out in the wild trying to get there, I would just be like, oh, I'll just go straight there now because I know where it is. I don't have to go to the theater anymore. Yeah. I'm trying to think. I feel like this is like one of the things I do really like about the survival stuff is there is this kind of narrative generating element of it. Like I have very vivid memories of there's that quest where you can some of the kin ask you to like butcher a bull as part of a ritual. And if you go to that, then you get like a couple slabs of meat, you know, as like payment. But it doesn't tell you that, you know, it doesn't. And like most things, most quests don't give you food. Like that is kind of a separate mechanism. And that's part of like the tension is like, okay, I have to go do this thing, but also I'm hungry. And if I don't eat, then I'm going to lose health. And like, and there's also all this like knock on stuff, which is kind of what happened to you eventually is that you couldn't kind of get out of the, you were sort of stun locked by it. Right. But they can be like, oh, like I didn't eat 3 hours ago and now I've eaten, but my health is lower and I died to this guy because my health was lower. Right. Sorry, I should finish the story, but you go to the bull and you like talk to this guy and it's sort of, you know, this moment of like, it's you trying to kind of be a part of the kin and reach out to them and understand them. And the, you know, the kin there are like really grateful to you and then give you this thing. And it was this, you know, and when I first played it, I was so hungry. I was like close to death and then got this gift, you know, from these people. And that was so powerful. Like it really hit me so hard. And part of that is that could be something that you're not hungry and you just get, oh, you get in a great bonus. You know, but because of like the way the game works, it can have this like incredible emotional weight, you know, because there's also one of the things is like you show up in the town and everyone hates you and like nobody except Laura really wants to help you. And then you are trying to like save everyone. And there's some people who are grateful to you for that. But a lot of it is just like, you know, asking you to do things for them. And that often don't have like explicit reward or, you know, or sometimes are red herrings or dead ends, right? And so then when you hit something where someone is like legitimately trying to assist you and make things easier for you, like that hits really hard and you feel the weight of like generosity in a way that it's just it's a really weird emotion to be in a video game, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. There's you eventually like unlock access to like the lab.
Yes. Yeah.
You're like underground lab. And then what's his name? Stinky? Sticky?
Stinky. He is kind of a stinky. He's sort of a, you know, he's kind of like an Igor.
He's like super eager to help you, but in a child way of like he clearly doesn't know what he's doing. But he just wants to help.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you go under there and it's like Chris Rima music is playing whenever you go in there. It's like, it's weirdly evocative whenever you go there. And it's like, I don't know, the music that plays, that little like guitar bit is like,
yeah.
Interesting. It's an interesting choice because so much of this game, and we haven't talked about the sound design yet, so much of this game is like, some of it is like kind of like percussion, like inspired because your character is half native. So like it has that, like in there, there's a lot of like, I don't know what to call it. Just like singing. I don't know what you call that.
Yeah, I don't know
what it's called.
What it is either.
But, yeah. And so there's a lot of that stuff. And then you go in these like indoor areas and it's like a completely different soundscape. Like you go to the bar and there's just like Silent Hill music is playing for some reason.
Yes, totally.
And,
yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like completely different soundscape. And then sound will like reflect the health you have. So like when you're low on health, you like hear bullets because like you're so low on health that like you're so like exhausted. You just start hearing like bangs and crashes and stuff.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Really cool. Apparently in the third game, they're going to change the arrangement of the music based on the game state, which sounds crazy.
Wow, that's wild. Yeah.
But yeah,
no, yeah, super cool. I there's stuff there that I didn't notice or like didn't think about, because you're totally right that like the, because there's like music that you hear on the step, there's music that you hear in connection to the kin or characters that are part of the kin, right?
Yeah.
And there's music of the town, and all of that stuff sounds different. And even like the, you hear when you're close to a tincture, like one of these herbs that you use to make.
Yeah.
The tincture is like, it makes like a sound, and it's sort of like a, like wind rustling through grass, or sort of like a wind chime sort of, you know, it has a very earthy or sort of natural sound to it.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's something that is, like, a lot of this game, there is sort of a bareness to it, or sort of a starkness to it. And so the introduction of a sound, of a music track, like, the part when you, like, get the cure, I mean, for me, this is what happened. I got the cure in the thing, and then, like, this, like, music, like, the most tonal music in the game starts playing, and there's a voice that's, like, singing you on, and it's like, whoa, like, I did a thing. Which is also awesome because it's like you make the cure, you cure somebody with it, and you're like, holy shit, I found the cure. And then you're like, wait, I don't know where this blood comes from. I have no idea how to make it. Like, what can we do, you know, that, it just feels very impactful. And yeah, I mean, I think that is also just one of the central, you know, themes of the game, is kind of like town versus nature, settler versus versus indigenous, right? These kind of like hard binaries that you occupy like an uneasy space between and must figure out how to navigate, and you know, what your role and relationship to that stuff is. And the game doesn't really have like easy answers or like nice conclusions for coming to that, right?
Yeah, and like sound design wise, like I found it interesting that like every time you go into like an affected area, you hear the same like
the buzzing, kind of like this,
buzzing and like the like chant in the background, which is cool when you learn the like real nature of the plague and like what causes it. And like stuff like you can get infected eventually, and when you do, you can like the plague has a voice and it speaks to you,
which
is really cool.
I should have let myself get infected. It like happened once and I reloaded my or twice and I reloaded my save because I wasn't like that far away from something. But
yeah, there's a real like aspect of like the plague is a character
in
the story.
And it does show up like really there are some, because there's the stuff with Murky where the plague's talking to her.
Yeah.
And then there's also stuff where like towards the end of the game, the plague's like, well, guess what? I'm going to infect all your kids. And there's nothing you could do to stop me. And you're like, God damn it.
Yeah, really like the scarier moments are when, like, a plague doctor who is like the manifestation of the plague,
yeah,
just like pops out of nowhere and speaks to you.
Yeah, or when you go, like, there's that scene where you go back to the factory where the lab is, and you walk in the door, and there's like all the bodies hanging from the ceiling.
It's so cool.
Ugh, yeah, and the plague's like, well, yeah, guess what? They're all gonna die. Like, that's what this is. You know, like, who are you to stop me? Right.
Yeah.
And then you know, the bodies do disappear, but the hooks are still there. That stuff is like, oof.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. Well, I was gonna say, with Murky, who's like this young girl who lives like in a train car, and it turns out, like, one of the things you find out is that your dad was like, had this like council of children that he was consulting and talking to and working with, because he believed they were the town's future, and like Murky is one of them, but not really explicitly named. And she just kind of shows up and starts talking to you, and is really uneasy and sort of hostile to you, but also is like there and hanging around, and like that, I don't know. I think that's like, she's kind of a figure that stands in, I think, for the like most marginalized of the town, and also kind of, like you, kind of belongs to neither part of it. You know, she lives out on the steppe. She's away from any of the town districts. She doesn't have any family, but she's also like living in this train car, had this relationship with the doctor, you know? And yeah, the first time I played, I did not do her quest, and so she died, because the plague will just kill her, basically, if you don't interfere. And then she like comes to you in a dream and is like, "You failed me," you know, which is like very heavy and intense. And so that was what, like, right after I got the cure, I like went and did her quest, because basically, like, the plague's like, either I'll kill her or infect you. And so then I like took the infection and was like, guess what? I got it. I got the cure right here. Yeah, I don't know if I have more to say about that, but I think that's like kind of interesting thing. There is like this sort of network of, the kin also are like the kind of like, proletariat, I guess. I don't know if that would be the exact precise thing, but they like work in the factory of the town. Like, they're the sort of labor force, and they live in like the giant brutalist apartment building structure on the edge of the town.
Yeah, right? there's like a power structure where like there's this guy named Big Vlad.
Big Vlad!
Who's like the evil boss figure. Mm-hmm. And then you eventually meet young Vlad, who
is the liberal reformer to Big Vlad's.
And is also like part of the problem.
Yeah.
Is also involved with like shutting down the factory, keeping people trapped inside of it, and letting the infection just kill everybody inside of it.
Yeah. Which, in fairness, he believes that he is protecting them, but also like doesn't go check or whatever. Yeah. Right.
This part of the game had me so bummed that I wasn't able to finish it. Like, there's an amazing fucking scene where you, like, the Inquisitor is there, and you just see her standing there, like, in that room, and you just hear like all these fucking noises of people screaming.
Yeah, and
shit. It's so fucked. It's really cool though.
Yeah, well, I think also that, because again, that thing of like, because Vlad the Younger is like, oh, they're locked up in there. The plague can't get in there. They're all fine. And there's like one of the children that your dad was looking after is like one of the kin. And so you're like, okay, well, I can't get in there, but like at least she's safe. And then that dread of like walking into it, and every, like, so many people are dying that there's just endless screams in this like gigantic structure, right? Is so.
Yeah.
And I think particularly like with the origins of the plague, which I mean, I guess we could talk about whenever, but like it has this direct relationship to the kin. And it's like from the earth, and that it's also like the kin who suffer the most from it and who are most vulnerable to it ultimately. You know, like that it just hits really hard.
How did you deal with that situation? Because in my game, before before my guy was unable to finish the game, because there you can go tell Vlad about this.
Yeah.
And then he's just like, I don't really give a shit, whatever. And then you go tell young Vlad, and young Vlad's like, this is my fault. I'm going to go there and face the consequences.
Yeah.
And you're just like, but you're the less Vlad, you're the less bad Vlad.
I want to yeah.
So you can tell big Vlad that young Vlad is going to go die, and then big Vlad is going to goes to the factory. In my perfect world of a game, I put big Vlad in the ground.
Yeah.
and just let the kin have him.
Yeah, totally. I let Vlad the Younger go to the kin and just like let him do it. Which, yeah, I don't know. Like, I think my character had sort of an ambivalent relationship to Big Vlad. Because he's also one of the people who will like shelter you in that first part of the game, right? But it is sort of like, they're sort of like, hey, if you stay here, I might have some work for you. You know, and that's kind of threatening, right? In a certain sense. So, but I didn't interact with him that much. I think, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think this is like one of the things, and I think part of what makes this such a compelling game is it has that like interpretive element that like a Disco Elysium has, where Artemis is like a character that kind of depends on how you think about him. And, you know, he can be someone who, like, I love the stuff with the kin language that you can either speak or just never interact with, right? Mm. Like, I think that sense of like, yeah, there's sort of a, again, I mean, he's kind of a person in between and can move between these different spaces. And like, so much of the game is about interpreting like where he fits into that. I also forgot about, there's some quest where Vlad the Younger is like working on something and he's like, hey. Oh, yeah, because he's digging in the town.
Mm-hmm.
And then anyway, really awesome, Chelsea. Oh, okay. So, yeah, so he gives you access to the lab, like the old factory building, and then it's like, don't tell Big Vlad. And I had already told Big Vlad that had happened. And so I was like, oh, fuck. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, weird. I forgot that Pathologic 1 had, like, actual photographs for people.
Huh.
And not in-game graphics.
Yeah. Big Vlad, you can put Big Vlad in the ground. You get there, because you get there and he's like in that big hole in the ground. You could talk to him and he's just like, so I'm here, you happy? And you could just be like, yeah, I am. And then just end the conversation.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Do you want to talk about all the kin stuff?
Yeah, like, I think we should.
The whole like thrust of the game, basically.
Yeah.
The whole plot.
I'm trying to think if there's any other groundwork. I mean, I think it's maybe good to know who Espidi is.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about Ouyun because he's like super important to the plot of the game. But Espidi is like a kind of medicine woman sort of type, and she like is kin. Some people say that she's not human, that she's like a Shabnak Adig, or something, that she has sort of like a mysterious connection to the Earth that's never like clarified. Anyway, and so she's sort of like one of the mentor figures and also someone who was like close to Isidore, Artemis' father. And she's also like a hot spot for the kin to meet. God, sorry, I just read what happens to her. I think she died in my playthrough of the first game too, of the first time, in which I did a different ending. Anyway, do you want to introduce this? I think I did the big summary at the top, so maybe you could talk about the kin and the... Oh, the other thing that's important context is that there's a woman who kind of follows you, an Herb Bride, dancers who also have, I mean, like many of the kin stuff, have like a special connection to the Earth. Their clothes are like ripped and torn from dancing. And there's an Herb Bride who comes to you and is like, hey, like, we're childhood friends, like, you should know me. I'm going to play an important role later in this. And then also, like, at one point, it's like, you have nothing to learn from me now. And so I'm just going to leave. And you're like, okay, you know, I don't know who you are still. Anyway, so those are important things. You discover some way that there's this blood that's, you know, that will cure the plague somehow.
Correct me if I'm wrong. How do you learn about Oyun at first?
I think you basically just get a like ping that's like, hey, go to the town. And maybe there's something there. But is it day seven where he shows up?
That makes sense, because yeah, I'm pretty sure, yeah, there's like, I think you get a thought that's like, maybe the town has something.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, on the wiki page, it says that the Inquisition arrives, the Horuspex, which is also another name. It's right, like the role that Artemis plays, returns to the old village to investigate the source of living blood, and Oyun is there.
So you go to meet him, and he like... lore dumps about the kin, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I really am having trouble remembering the order of events.
Yeah, so basically he is like, you have to go inside this temple kind of structure, the abattoir. That's like where the blood comes from. But you can't, I will let you in. Like, you have to, because the kin are in like crisis. They have like a, you know, power struggle. Through, you know, so you have to like go figure that out before I'll let you into this place, right?
Because also, like, your dad was the leader of the kin,
yes,
if I remember correctly.
I think there's some relationship there, yeah.
And so, like, part of it is just taking his path, and following in his footsteps, but like, this is like a trial to prove you're worthy of doing that, basically.
Right, yeah. When he's also, I forgot that he and you are Menku, who are like a caste that are allowed to dissect human bodies.
Right. Which Reuben was not, and that's why they wanted to kill him, basically.
Right.
But yeah, it's like, I forget what day it is. Is it 9? Where you're able to go in there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I recall there being some stealth. You have to sneak around a little bit.
Yeah. Well, there's this sequence of, basically there's a bunch of worms, I forget what they're called. I forget the other name for them. But they'll like attack you on sight, and so you have to like sneak and kill them, and then you can get bottles with which you can get blood that then you can use to cure people. And this is also right around the time the plague is like, hey, I'm gonna infect all these children. So, you know, you do get like 5 cures that you can then use to like pop some of that pressure.
Right, because when you go in, when you like first go in, there is like a small amount of blood that you can take and then make a cure from it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But then you go deeper in. You eventually like meet the woman that you mentioned who's been talking to you the whole game. I forget the exact thing, but like you have to sacrifice her in order to like become the leader of the kin, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then so you do that, and then you go to this like open like core area and you see your dad.
Yes, yeah.
And he basically tells you that he is the cause of the plague returning, because there was the same plague 5 years ago that Isidore already took care of.
Mm-hmm.
But he decided to let the plague happen again, because he viewed the town as needing to start over, have a fresh start.
Yeah, and have he describes it as vaccination, right? Like as like an inoculating element. And then it's like, I brought you back to the town to like choose what it will become, and I trust you to like know what it is, right?
And he's basically like, you're my son, you're wonderful, you can do no wrong, whatever, however you see to handle the situation, you do it.
Yeah. And I think that is like one of the things, is that there's such a warmth and reverence around him, and this is a place where it's possible to be like caustic about your dad and be like, he did something horrible, right? For you know, for some ideal, right? Like killed thousands of people, you know. But basically you go kind of into the earth.
It's so sick.
And first you create your own heart and then speak with it. And your heart is like, hey, you ever thought about how the plague is not affecting anyone like outside of the town? Or like, you know, who are like in the abattoir? And there's people like Herbrites who are like cultivating it or like dancing with it. And so there's like a question, okay, like where does the plague come from? Anyway, he jumps into this pit. And then there's like this, there's a gigantic heart in there, and there's a spike close to it. We didn't even explain the polyhedron.
Yeah.
How do you explain?
There's a fucking structure that floats and the kids hang out in there, and they're safe from the plague when they're in there.
Yeah.
And it's made by, what's the name?
There's like two architects, yeah.
What is the name?
Peter Stemmington.
Yes.
Stemmington,
and then there's the Canes as well.
Right, yeah.
So
who like funded it, Victor Kane.
So they make this thing, and they basically, they treat it as a miracle that they're able to make this thing.
Right.
And it's the thing that floats and kids are in it and you're not allowed to go in until after a certain day, to which you can go up there and check it out.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Which I didn't do this time, weirdly.
Yeah, you talk to the big heart. There's like an ambiguity around the heart because it like it always ends up repeating the last word you say.
Yeah.
And then you can be like, are you an echo? And you can like choose to believe if it is or isn't speaking to you. It is cool.
Yeah.
And then you come out of the well that young Vlad built.
Yes. You just yeah.
Pop, you just pop out of there.
Well, yeah, young Vlad was onto something, right? Like he was investigating this taboo that like there was a reason it existed, but yeah. So basically, you and kind of the Inquisitor also figures out that like the polyhedron has like cut a hole into the earth and is plugging it. And so if you destroy it, then the blood, you know, it'll pierce the heart of the earth and blood will emerge freely. And then you'll have enough blood to cure everybody in the town. Mm-hmm. Right. But if you do that, then the earth is dead. And so like the kin, the worms and like the Earthrides and like these kind of there's also another like the weird like stick guys who I don't remember what they're called, who are like connected to the earth as well, who are also like creatures. They will all perish, right? And like the kin will have lost like the thing that, you know, makes them what they are, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's like the final like big choice is between those two things, right? And it is sort of a choice between the town or the steppe, right? In some sense.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And then there's a whole thing where like the Inquisitor dies and then but leaves three notes for three separate people to try to deliver to the military yes. guy.
Yes, yeah, uh-huh.
And you have to search for that. That's where you meet, like, you other Artemy.
Mm-hmm.
And you, like, talk to him. And so you just, like, go on this mad hunt for this note. And if you succeed at that, you deliver it to the military head. And he's just like, all right, bet, we got to shoot that thing down.
Yeah,
if you choose to do that,
right, and then you can burn it, and it ensures that you know the military will just leave, basically, and so will like most of the town's residents. Like that's the other thing, is most people are just like, well, we'll just leave. Like the plague is not anywhere else, so we'll go, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I think, a very because I did that ending this time. And that sequence of like talking to people who are trying to leave the town was very haunting, especially like you can like try and beg people to stay, you know, and kind of argue like, oh, there is a life beyond this. There's something that can happen here. And you just have to like believe in that and like help me show you what it is. And then people being like, no, you know, is like kind of brutal.
Mm-hmm. The only person that's truly happy with your decision is Aspidi.
Yeah, who's like, you have, because I was just reading about, like, because she dies, basically. Mm-hmm. And she's like, she was created by the earth so that he may have a mother, yet he has turned his back on her. She will go blind and then deaf, and that is likely that she will die, is what it says on the wiki. So, like, there's sort of a, yeah, like she's also one of the kin that's kind of an individual, because so many of them are like roles that are played and don't have like a strong sense of individuality. Like it's her and Oyun, and that's it. Oh, also, Oyun killed your dad.
Yeah. So, yeah. So basically, I completely forgot to mention that. Holy shit.
Yeah.
So yeah. So like, your dad had the plague, and Oyun was like, "This guy is not making any sense. He's about to die. I'm just gonna kill him."
Right.
And you can make the choice to be like, "I'm just gonna let you live with this."
Yeah.
I don't remember if you can kill him or not, but.
I think you can tell him to kill himself, I think is what.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, you can kill him, yeah. As well. I don't know if you like fight him or something.
But that's also like one thing I like about the kin is like you like they kill people, but like
yeah,
you try to bring it up with them and they're like, we're not doing anything to them. We just look into their soul.
Right.
we just stare into their soul.
Yeah.
Like implying that they just like commit suicide, but like it's cool. And you could just
yeah.
basically do that to him of just like, yeah, I'm just going to live. Like you're telling me that like you're overcome with guilt and you want to die. I am just going to walk away. You can just right. live with that.
Yeah, totally.
Or not, you know?
Yeah. I think that like think there's also the part where the kin, when they're having their dispute, can are like, you just need to kill the people who don't want to go to the town or to go to the old town, because that's sort of the question is like, should we stay here, should we go to the old town? And it's like, you just need to kill those guys. You can be like, no, I'm not gonna do that. And they're like, well, that's what you got to do, right? Like, we're all a body, and it's better for us to cut off an arm than to die collectively. Right. And so there's this kind of like communal thinking that is sometimes very strange and like alien, you know, and you can like it basically if you wait, it works out, you know, and you can kind of go back and they all go to the village and stuff, like it just takes time. But I think that is like an interesting, I mean, it's not that the it's because I think there's sort of a thing where you can be like, oh, like the kin are so violent and they're so whatever, but I think it's they're really honest about it and they have like rules about the way this stuff works and they're very straightforward, whereas like, you know, Big Vlad kills them by overworking them and putting them in these horrible situations and like doing all this stuff, right? Like it, you know, it all exists like in this continuum. Like, I just think that there's, like, an interesting... Like, the game is thinking a lot about, like... I mean, again, it's a lot about death. So it's, like, also thinking about, like, what does it mean to kill? Who do you kill when you kill someone? What does that mean? You know? And questions about, like, individuality and, like, selfhood are, like, a huge part of that.
Yeah. I don't know where to go from here.
Yeah, I mean, we could talk about some if there's like characters we haven't touched on that we want to talk about. I mean, some of these people I don't think are super important. Like there's like the general.
I alluded to it earlier, but like spirituality is a huge part of this game. Like,
yeah.
There's a bunch of like dream sequences that are really cool. And sometimes they like point you in the direction of like the thing to do. There is a girl in the town that can like hear ghosts or like hear the dead.
Yeah, Grace.
She's really cool.
Yeah.
There's this really good scene where like you go to the cemetery and like you can listen to like your father speak, but like it's clear that he isn't speaking to you. He's like speaking to some other guy having some unrelated conversation. Like not like you're just like talking past each other, basically. It's cool as hell.
Oh yeah. I liked it because it's like clear that because she can speak to the ghosts or speak to dead bodies, kind of, rather.
Yeah.
But it has some strain on her, and so I was like, I don't want to do it. You know,
it has strain on her because all the people in the factory are dying.
Right. Yeah.
And so you can move her further away from it to alleviate right. that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then there's a point where it's like there's mass grave there. And so she's like, I love the thing where she like gives you a little bit of her power because you're like, it doesn't make like the corpses are talking like, listen to yourself. You're like 13 years old. Like, chill out, you know. And then you go and then there's like the body's like, it's cold, there's too many people here, this is awful. And you're like, oh. Mm-hmm. And you can like burn the bodies or like take Grace away from that place so she will not like die from strain, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool. She so the nocturnal ending is the one where you don't hear the plague. She becomes the mistress of the dead, and is like one of the like ruling women of the town. Which is pretty cool.
That's pretty cool.
And yeah,
We haven't talked about Clara yet.
Mm-hmm.
The changeling.
Oh yeah. Yeah. God. She's so cool. I really want to play the original game at some point and like maybe I'll do a Horror Specs playthrough last and do like Changeling and Bachelor first. I don't know. But yeah. She's so fickle towards you, which is an interesting. I think the way that like the player, because the Bachelor is also like those are the three player characters of the original game. The way that those characters kind of dance around you and have like alternate views of you, and then sort of like it's just really interesting. I'm trying to think if there's stuff that other stuff I want to talk about with her. Oh yeah, and she also claims that she can. Oh yeah, that's that part at the end of the game where she has been caught up in like the shootout between the two military factions that are fighting each other, and she's like, "I can't cure people anymore." And then you're like, "Well, how many people did you cure?" And she's like, "Well, like 300." And you're like, "Jeez, I cured like 10 people," you know. Also, yeah, in my game, like Notkin, who is one of the like children faction leaders, and Khan, like the young Khan, were like the first two people to be infected, or like among the first people to be infected, named people to be infected. And so I was like, I cured them with stuff. And then like when I hit the end of the game, but it's like, I'm going to infect all the kids. I was like, God damn it, I forgot that they're already going to be infected. And you know, in Notkin's case, it was like it saved me some bother not having to worry about him for a few days. But then in Khan's case, it was like the day before that I had given him a cure, given him a schmowder, and then was like, oh well, I just have to do this again, I guess.
Yeah.
There's also Taya. Tai Cheek, who's like the leader of the kin, and or the termitary, which is where the like the big structure where the kin live. She's like very sweet and harsh, and I don't know, she's cool. Yeah, she's also one of the few kin who like doesn't get mad at you for destroying the polyhedron, which is interesting. I mean, I guess she's like, you know, she's a little baby. But it's also cool, like, when, because it's her, the changeling, and Grace, like, on the polyhedron overlooking the town, and, like, we're the mistresses now. That's pretty cool. Talking about Big Vaughn. I didn't have any stuff with Khan because he was sick the whole time. So, like, I think there's Khan and Notkin stuff that I just did not get because they were sick. And that's sort of the thing, is when someone is sick, like their quest lines, like there's one with Laura towards the end of the game that I didn't get because she was sick, right? Like their quest lines sort of stop once they become infected. And obviously if they die, you know, that happens too. And so that's like an interesting thing where there's sort of like an incentive to try and protect people, not just because you don't want them to die, but because like there might be things that they can tell you or things, ways they can help you that then shut off when they're too sick to do anything else but be sick. Right. I'm trying to think.
There's also the way that this game handles death is interesting in terms of like characters will have like lines that they say when they're in like this like sick state, because basically like once they're infected enough, like they like are just covered in cloth
as they
spread the infection. And so while they're in that state, they're just like, yeah, I'm going to die. This is what is important to me. Like, you know, they just like have last words basically
if you right. don't hear them. Yeah.
Or like the most heartbreaking one is like Sticky, who's just like who's just like a kid that's hanging out who's dying, and you're just like, hold on, I need to carry you.
Yeah, no, I love all the scene, because you get like dialogue with all the kids when they become infected right at the end, right? Mm-hmm. And they're, it's just all so heartbreaking. Like I the murky is like, I hope I turn into swearine, which is like this orange flowered herb that you can collect, you know, like that stuff of like total confrontation with death and feeling the contours of it and her being so young, you know. I think that stuff is just really the way it puts you in this position where you like have to take care of all these people because they don't have anyone else, you know, it's like really is really rough. I guess also this is kind of general as well. I love the way this game looks. Like there's such a, it's in some ways quite simple. Like it's not, you know, especially ornate, but it just has, because of that, it can be so striking. The like parts, you know, the sunset, sunrise, sunset lighting and the way it kind of comes in through the trees or like circles around a building, can be really powerful. Or just like interesting. I love the like sense, the different architectural styles that buildings have and the way that that communicates something about the town, like the sort of sheer brutalist factory stuff, and the weird, you know, the polyhedron being this like impossible thing that's always looming in the distance and that glows with this light so you can like see it from most places in the town. I think that stuff is like, I don't know, it's just is really like, it feels very deliberately, and there's, you know, very few cutscenes, right? And it, I think that that stuff just, I think that's the thing, is it's really evidence that like, I mean, I'm kind of a person who is like, oh, like video games can and should take from film. Like there's so many interesting things to do with it. And there's like very good examples of like how effective that can be. But Pathology doesn't really care about any of that. Like it's not very filmic in any way. It's so much more theatrical. And I think it's so, works so well within that, you know, it really is not, it's such a strength of it, you know? So sometimes it is like, we are kind of obsessed with this and maybe we do need to get outside of it a little bit.
Yeah, every character has like a theater spotlight on them when you talk to them.
Yeah.
Which is a cool touch. I also like how like Morrowind mod this game feels.
Yeah, totally.
It's mainly whenever characters like show up to tell you something, you just get full on somebody sprinting at you, and you have that half second of like, are you gonna try to kill me or like,
right?
And then it goes, and then it goes to like first person view on their face, and you're like, okay. And sometimes that's used for like jump scares, and that's cool. But it is mainly just funny to play a game where an NPC runs at you full sprint
to tell you
to go somewhere. It's great.
But also just that sense of like, at any time someone can make an imposition, you know. That feels rough.
What do you, and we can kind of, this might be an okay note to end on, but like, how do you feel about the endings and like the whole tension between the steppe and the town?
Yeah.
Cause I feel like there's a kind of the prioritizing the earth over the town feels very bad end to me. And I don't know how intentional that is versus like siding over the town. Because like there is like the tension of like, I don't know. It's very, I don't want to say like, it seems very black and white where it's like there is no middle ground between, you know, letting the town live and kind of destroying the earth. And maybe that's just the point of it.
I mean, I think that it is like, I think that there is a grimness to, I mean, it is ambiguous, right? Like, I do think it's not, I don't think the game is making a definitive statement about either thing. Mm-hmm. But I think, like, there's a part when you go, you know, when you're, when you get, try to find the fate of one of the orders and, like, leave a building, and then a bunch of kin creatures show up and they're like, don't do this. Don't kill us. You know? Mm-hmm. Right? Like, I think it's pretty, you know, clear where, like, the game is, like, trying to make that decision feel, I think, harrowing, you know? And there is kind of a way that, like, the plague is this, I mean, it's kind of what the dad describes it to be, right? That it's like this force of, that forces you to change and to change the way you live. And it's not something that is, like, bad in and of itself, or that should be eradicated, right? It's something that you can live with, and maybe should be lived with, you know? Like, I think there's, it feels really thorny to me. I mean, my, my friend Lotus wrote, which I'll link to you, and we can also put it in the description, wrote a thing about Pathological 2 that's basically a big advocacy for a nocturnal ending as, like, the correct ending, or, like, the good end, right? And I think part of it is that there's sort of, like, I think, I don't know, something that is very difficult. I mean, this is the very, like, this is a lot of the language used in the thing, you know, like, the final paragraph says, instead, you, Artemy Barak, say farewell to order, farewell to prisons, industry, and the death march called progress. Farewell to the townsfolk, sleepwalking across the moonlight steppe, still lost in the dream of civilization. Instead, you embrace your love for the earth and all its creatures. You embrace the kin, now liberated from the crushing weight of colonial modernity, and together you dance on the ashes of a world once nourished by your blood. Right? I think there's, like, a sense of, like, and there is also, like, a past-future kind of dichotomy, I guess, between those two things. But I think there is also, like, I think to me there's a sense of, like, that the better world is going to come through some measure of loss, right? Like, that's just a fact of it, you know? Yeah. And not everything lost will be bad in and of itself, you know? So I don't, I don't know that the game is necessarily taking that perspective on it, right? I think it is, I don't know. I guess it feels a little bit more ambivalent or sort of questioning to me. And I think there are things like, you know, the fact that so much of the Durandal ending, the destroying the polyhedron ending, is takes place at in the day, and you, like, walk around, like, and that's the thing, is the town is there, and then you don't go inside the town, like, in the second, the town is not around, and you can't, like, walk through it. You don't have any freedom. You're kind of teleported from place to place. Yeah. Right? But I think that that's, yeah, like, those things to me are not bad. Like, that loss is not, is not evil, I guess, maybe is the way to put it. It just is.
Do you not think, you know, though, that the game, like, you choosing that ending and the game, like, all right, you chose this ending. Now talk to all the kids that are, like, scared and confused as to what is going on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but the thing is, like, some of them aren't scared and confused. Some of them are now powerful in this new place in a way they wouldn't have been, you know?
True.
Like, yeah. Like, I'm not, you're right. Like, you're totally right. I'm not trying to, like, but I think there is, like, it's really, and then also, like, the last person you talk to is Espiti, who is, like, you are my child and have saved what matters, you know? Like, you have done the thing that I, like, raised you to do, and I'm so happy and proud for you that you protected, like, the things of the earth, right? Like, that was what you were born to do, right? You know, and you have the kind of the reverse thing where characters say to you about destroying the polyhedron, like, you are so heroic, and, like, you cured the plague, like, you did the thing. And then Espiti is like, I'm going to die and you betrayed me, you know? Right? So I think there is, again, it is like a hard moral choice, TM, But I think what's impressive about it is its authority with implication, and I think you can, like, sincerely take a position and advocate for one, because it is kind of a forceful choice, you know, that you have to take with some measure of conviction.
Right.
And I think that that's interesting.
Yeah. It is very interesting. I just can't imagine playing this game because there's so much like tension around. I mean, one of the first things you see in this game is the Herb Bride getting burned to death by the people in the village. So like there is a huge like tension between the staff and the people of the town. And like, I don't know. There isn't like a chance to like not build a world that's like super exploitative, because like I'm super off put by like playthroughs of this game that save Big Vlad, because like fuck that guy, what the fuck?
Yeah. Well, I think I think there's something that's nice about the way the game doesn't put a hard input on these systems to some degree, that it's like, hey, like you can choose what the future of the town is by deciding who lives or dies. Mm-hmm. Right. And it doesn't outside the, there's the thing with Big Vlad and young Vlad the Younger, like where you can save him, you know, but there is like a thing. Also, just like for the record, this piece that I linked from Lotus, like, is very critical of, I think, the game's like binaries and dichotomies of some of the stuff. Right. So I just want to like flag that it's not necessarily like, oh, like the way the game portrays this is good and the nocturnal ending is good. Like, I think there's some, like, there's ambivalence that you could read, I think, fairly as like inherently settler colonial in construct, right? Like the idea, I mean, this is the idea that Lotus talks about, is that the idea that the kin are the past, right? And the town is the future.
Yeah.
Right. Is like represents kind of a sort of logic that, you know, might be a little bit fraught, to say the least. I guess there is something else I want to talk about, which I feel like maybe would have been better to do right at the beginning, but here we are. It's just that I forget exactly whom, but one of the writers of the game, the lead writer, was a professor at a university in Russia and was accused by students, like 18, 19-year-old students, of like basically grooming them and like sexually harassing them, I think a few other things. The thing that's a little tricky about this, and I should have looked it up, but there, you know, this wasn't reported on in the English language press like at all. And so all the information that I could find about it like a few months ago when I was thinking about this was like posts on the Pathology 2 Reddit that relied on like people translating like notes app, you know, things and stuff. And I think that that is tough. I do think that I don't want to be the kind of person who's like, oh, like you can tell by playing the video game that it's made by a creep. Like, I don't think that's fair, but there's just stuff in the game that now feels more uncomfortable to me now, like the way sometimes the game, because like the children have their own kind of like order, they're very adult in some ways, although I don't think they're really written as adults. It's actually in some ways really nice about the way it handles children as like people who are complex and have agency of their own and desires of their own, that are not fully explained by adults. But and then also the stuff around the Herb Brides and like murdering this woman in the, you know, there's sort of a thing of like, there's just some stuff here that feels kind of uncomfortable in that light. And I also just wanted to flag that, like, that is the thing that happened. Like, it was the thing that this man was accused of. As far as I know, I don't, that he's still at Ice Pick Lodge, you know, the developer, and is still working on Pathologic 3. And I think it's also like a shame that there is just like no, I mean, the game was just not big enough for this stuff to get like an English language report or investigation. And also maybe like who in Games Press like knows Russian and can figure this out. You know, there's just not like resources for that to happen. So yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I don't have any more thoughts there, but I just wanted to like flag that as a thing that I think feels important to address at the very least.
Mm-hmm. Is he still there?
I'm not 100% sure. And also I'm forgetting the guy's name. So,
Nikolai Dabowski.
Mm-hmm.
I don't speak Russian, but
Google Doc. I do. Yeah. I have this wiki. I have this, actually. Oh yeah. There was the email. I think I sent that email. That seems unreliable. Yeah, but I don't know, like, because I don't even know that there's like a credits, you know. I mean, maybe there's like on the website there could be something. Mm-hmm. Ice Pick Lodge. Like, I just don't know how to even find this out. Okay, yeah, all I can see. Okay. So there, as of 2022, he was still at the studio. But I can't. I don't know. Okay. But yeah, I can't find anything else about it. And he's also, the studio founder. So he's like a key figure creatively.
Yeah, there is a former employee that alleges that he is still there, but,
right. Okay.
Hard to say. But also like Ice Pick Lodge is more than just him at this point.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, it's like, there's like five writers on this game, you know?
There's a pretty cool video of the sound team going through, the systems of what's going to be Pathologic 3.
Yeah.
So I don't know. And I don't know how involved he is and stuff. It seems
right.
Like
yeah.
This ex-employee alleges that, like, the studio is functioning. Whether or not he's there, you know.
Right, yeah.
But anyway. Yeah. Just sucks, but you know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's tough. And I also don't have like a, I don't know, I don't have like a program to say like this is what you should do about it. But I just think it, I don't know, it's tough. This stuff is so normalized in like a very strange way, and sometimes is also like just lack of knowledge, but also like any action of like personal boycott that is taken is like doesn't do anything, you know. Mm-hmm. Maybe prevents you from having some bad feelings, but like it's not, you know.
Yeah.
It's not like an effective avenue for political change or social change, right? So I just but I do think it's, I think sometimes it is good and important to like feel uncomfortable and think about it, you know. I think it's better to do that than do nothing at all. So
for sure.
Oh, it was 16 days ago. Damn. Okay.
Are you looking at that Reddit post?
Yeah. There's like a new one, but God, it's there's a lot of untranslated Russian here.
I know. Yeah.
Oh yes. Okay. Yeah. Seeing you were talking about it. Okay, yeah.
From this like person's experience with this person.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like the studio could function good if not better. Like the accusations aside, I have definitely worked with people in leadership who suck ass as people.
Yeah, totally.
And so this account of this person's personality leads me to believe that is definitely a similar situation of life.
I mean, I think that's also sometimes, yeah, that is like sometimes the thing is just that people like, I mean, it might also be complicated because he's the founder, like what, you know, yeah. I don't know what the like legal situation is with that. And he, you know, he's not the kind of person to bow out gracefully, it sounds like, you know? So, yeah, this is rough.
Yeah, it's also hard to talk about because it's like translated.
Yes, like, exactly. Yeah. It's like, I don't know.
Three steps removed from the thing.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. Should we do emails? It's hard, awkward to transition from here, but
yeah, let's take a break and then we'll do emails.
Okay. Back from our break.
We're back from our break.
Let's read some emails. I'm excited.
All right. We have one pathologic email and one general mm-hmm. email. I'll read the first one from Jen. Much of Pathologic and Pathologic 2's tension centers around the flow of time. The games are constantly advancing with or without your involvement, which means that it's incredibly difficult, if not outright impossible, to see every important event in the single playthrough. Would you consider this to be a key part of Pathologic's horror? If so, how would you recommend getting around or accepting that particular fear, especially when the person playing has an anxiety disorder?
So for the real question, I'd say I have like two feelings about this, I think. Because on one hand, I think, yes, like there's a lot of this game about the anxiety of failure, the fear of failure mm-hmm. and like what failure will mean. And the fact that, you know, failure does have consequences and it shapes the world and it makes bad things happen. Right. Like people, you know, like there was time where I like forgot to drop like try and treat a couple people, but I had some medicine and I just like went somewhere else. Like I really, you know, I came back and reloaded, and then people died, you know? Mm. And I was like, shit. Okay. But I also think there is kind of, because the game is so concentrated on it, and because like ultimately you can dust off and try again, there is, I particularly had the sense playing it the first time, there is a sense of like you kind of grow to accept the thing, you know, because you can't, failure is inevitable. This is like a lesson that I've kind of had to learn a little bit in my life lately, because I also probably have an anxiety disorder and also am like a semi-masked autistic person working on it. And like the thing with that is there's so much like, oh, if I act in the exact correct way, or if I treat people exactly correctly, then they'll never be mad at me. Mm. And I'll always work, you know, everything will be chill. And I never have to have like conflict, because I'm always like smoothly navigating and like anticipating what people will think and say. Mm. Or what people, you know. And the thing is, you just can't, your human brain does not have enough computing power to do that, actually. Mm. And so, you know, like letting go and accepting that you will have failures, like, is not gonna like, oh, failures will happen if you become less, you know, vigilant or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I think that there's like a level of, I think the game is in part about like accepting that inevitability and kind of trying to live, you know, within it to some degree.
Yeah, for me, I mentioned in our discussion of it, but like the like tension of like you're this doctor and your job is to help people, and like not being able to do that with everybody, like there was a point in this game like where I was just like, all right, I just need to let this happen. I just need to like let go and just like go with this game, mm-hmm. and just see where it takes me.
Yeah, totally.
Taking my hands off the wheels, you know?
Right, yeah. I think that that's like, and I think it's hard to do that. I think with the second element, like the thing I did when I played this in 2020 was that I basically just said, I'm going to put an hour in, you know, like every day I'm going to play an hour. And I don't have to play more, right? But I'm just going to play a little bit of it. And that helped me get through it and get to a point where I could really enjoy it and get a lot out of it. So I don't know, maybe that's helpful. Also, like, I'll also link this in the description, because there's a guide from gameplay.tips. which is very good and like pretty comprehensive, and like there's no shame in using something like that. There's no shame also in turning it off intended difficulty, changing some of that stuff around, like whatever you want to do to help you play it. And like, fuck the devs for making it so you can there's an achievement you can only get if you beat it on intended difficulty. Like, whatever, bro. You know,
man, we didn't even talk about that of like,
I mean, we could talk about it now, I guess,
the intended difficulty thing. Like, at least on Xbox, like, you have to, every time you open the game, you have to turn the intended difficulty off and then play it. It's so stupid.
Yeah,
this is like part of like my contention with the theater framing, that is just like, this is just pretentious as hell. Like,
yeah, it is. It is so pretentious.
I am trying to enjoy your video game.
Yeah, I think part of the reason that doesn't bother me so much is that video games are a notoriously unpretentious medium. And so sometimes I find it a little refreshing. When someone's a little up their own ass in a way that's not like a Ken Levine, kind of situation, you know?
Sure.
But I, that's probably not the correct opinion.
yeah.
But
it's just, yeah, it's just, I don't know.
That is fucking annoying. It shouldn't be that way.
It's just annoying.
Like, even if that is an Xbox-only issue, like, are you for real? You might as well not port it if it's, like, has that kind of stuff. You know?
Yeah. I don't know.
Oh, this is from a Steam guide. Hmm. Is this just, like, copy-pasted? That some work that someone else did?
Fuck. Oh, no.
I'm gonna find the Steam version of this. Yeah, okay. I found the Steam link. I'm posting that instead.
Nice.
God damn. That's fucking shady.
Boo. I'm gonna censor the original URL.
Yeah. Just in our chat. Yeah. Internally. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gaming. I think that's it. I mean, also it's like, it's also okay if something isn't for you and you want to watch an LP, like, you know, I think there's lots of legitimate ways to engage with it. I think that's the advice I would give, though, is just trying to like do it regularly and just let yourself be kind of stressed for that period, but it's only for that length or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Like a limited amount of time, and then like do something that, you know, drink some tea and watch anime or whatever you like you want to do to like chill out after that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Should we do the next email?
Yeah. Looking at this is from Emrys. Looking at the games you covered this year, please rank them. I don't think we'll rank them, but like
we'll do one.
We have some categories that we can talk about.
Yeah.
The first one is scariest moment or sequence.
So let's see. What was the first game we played this year?
It is Evil Within 2.
Okay. Or last year, rather. Okay.
Yeah.
Scariest moment or sequence?
Her story having to play it.
No, it's not bad. It's like an hour long.
Yeah, that's fine.
I'm trying to think. I feel like it's something in Rule of Rose, but I can't. But, you know, that game's sort of scary in a weird way.
I feel like it's something in Fatal Frame 3.
Yeah.
When you, like, go to the hospital and that body disappears.
That's scary.
Gets like tattooed and then disappears.
Oh, the tattoo stuff in that game is scary. That's a good pick. I like the part in Rule of Rose when you're in the coffin. They've like dug you in the coffin, and then you look out the like slats of the wood, and there's the moon shining in the distance. Anyway.
I like the part in Pathologic 2 where a coffin bounces off a bunch of boxes and then the guy pops out.
Oh, yeah! Right at the beginning? God, it owns. Ugh. I think
the one thing I like about the framing of Pathologic 2 is like potentially the devil being just some guy that comes out of the coffin is very funny.
Yeah. Oh my god. What was I gonna say? I also think the abattoir, or you know, the temple stealth sequence of Pathologic 2 is like so striking and strange and unnerving. You know, that's a great sequence. I don't know if that's like scariest as such, but it's just such a great run, you know, to have a game that's so open and that's so much about you, like not exactly exploring, but like trying to figure things out and doing what you can. And then have the sequence where it's like, you have to get through this and there's only one way out. Right. Is like so rattling, you know, it's cool.
Anytime somebody looks at you in Pathologic,
right.
And you're like, are we cool? Are we cool?
Are we fighting? Yeah. Saddest, most pathetic character is the next thing.
Probably someone in Killer 7, right?
I guess so. Sure. I was you could say James, I guess.
That's so true. He's been here for 25
years.
What about
Mr. Crow from Crow Country? I mean, he's kind of competent, you know?
Yeah.
He's kind of with it.
Yeah, I feel like it's probably James or some weeb in Killer 7 or something.
Some guy. Yeah, totally. Best gameplay feel. This is Killer 7, right? Maybe Crow Country?
I was going to say Crow Country for this.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Killer 7 might be my pick, though. Like, it's good.
Killer 7 might be my pick if I try to look into the sensitivity settings around my aiming.
Sure, fair. God.
Because the aiming did not feel good on
an
analog stick. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm. All right. Most effective soundtrack.
Rule of Rose. We didn't talk about it on the podcast. Yes. Bad podcaster.
I know. I can't believe we didn't talk about that. It's so fucking good.
Yeah, just to have a genre dominated by like electronic music and just like atmospheric like synthy stuff, just to have like an orchestral soundtrack,
like chamber music. Yeah.
Fully like live and like played is like awesome.
It's so cool. Well, and it's just it is this dissonant. It's also the way it's recorded. I think it has such a like harsh quality to it.
Yeah.
You know, it has this, it's very like Schoenberg-y sort of, you know, very dissonant. I mean, it's more melodic than that, but like, yeah, it's just very cool.
Every time I watch a YouTube essay and a Rule of Rose song plays in the background, I get up and cheer.
Yeah, totally. Oh my God. Yeah. 100%. Okay. Most horrifying enemy. Bloober team. I did not like those skeleton guys in Crow Country. I did not like those guys. They're scary.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
They're scary to me. They're long and scary. Actually, for real, the answer might be, though, just like some thug in Pathologic 2. or like two, if there's two of them. That's scary.
Pathologic has such a weird relationship with othering people. Because, like it tries to humanize the step to like mix results, but also like the thugs are just like thugs.
They're just gonna kill you. Like, yeah. Well, and then you and, get and you and killing them just gives like, you benefits, basically,
and
right?
Then, yeah. Like, and then they're no, like they're infected, but then because of that, their skin is darker, and it's like, guys.
Well, they also like paint. What their are we skin. Doing? They also paint their skin white. I think right sometimes.
Do
or
they?
Like. I feel like they look, some of them look pale rather than darker.
Maybe. I just know that like.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not disbelieving you.
Especially at night, like these like reddish faces.
And yeah. I think some of them do have also like, maybe they're, some of them might be infected. And so they have like black splotches on them or something. And then some of them might also have like black paint of some kind.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, it is a. It is.
I'm trying to remember what they're called.
Yeah, it's a weird byproduct of like trying to increase tension in the game, where you just have nameless NPC guys who are evil.
Yeah,
and just try to kill you. And
yeah, you, well, you do also get the thing though, where like some of them will back off if you like wound them, and then you can still kill them. Or
the part is always funny where it's like, dog, you tried to kill me, and now you're like. Hey, let's take it easy. Hey, let's not do anything hasty here.
Yeah, it's so funny. Or some of them will just book it, right? Some will just be like, I'm leaving.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Most for I'm trying to think.
Yeah.
Probably the Fatal Frame 3 final boss.
Yeah.
The tattooed woman is like,
it's so scary. Good. Yeah, totally. Totally. Oh, the other thing I was going to say is that people complain about the combat in this game, and it is kind of simple and kind of awkward. In Pathology 2, I mean, specifically. But the feeling when you successfully pull a fucking counter off and, like, don't take damage is truly incredible. because you're so vulnerable all the time, and because it's, like, kind of difficult to, like, especially if someone, like, has a knife that you're kind of fucked, like, you're going to take damage, you know? Like the feeling of like being able to successfully navigate one of those encounters is like very high, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, that's all.
Also, like, you're a guy. You're just a guy. You're not playing Call of Duty, bro.
Yeah.
come on.
Yeah, totally.
You're not playing Final Fantasy Rebirth. You're just a guy.
You're just a guy. Okay.
Best safe room.
I like the lab in Pathology 2. That's cool.
Yeah, it's good.
I'm trying to think, is there a safe room in Rule of Rose? Kind of not really.
Not really. There are just rooms that have the... I guess technically, by definition, it does.
Yeah.
But there's no, like... There's no theming around it. It just has the...
Yeah. The scarecrow and...
The scarecrow and the mop and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I like the room in Crow Country that's like the big bookcase room, and you like find the policeman reading a book in there.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool. Sorry, continue.
Oh, I was just gonna. I don't know. I was gonna say Crow Country as well, but
yeah.
The Killer 7 one is like iconic, but like,
yeah,
it's also like the room where sexual assault happens in it. So
yeah, that's true.
But the TV is iconic.
The TV is so cool. Yeah. The TV is very cool.
I'm a cleaner.
Yeah. I love that guy. Fuck, that game's good. Ah, all right.
I saw a tweet a while ago that was like, That like one of the guys in Killer 7 who's like kill bark is just get fucked.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so just funny. So visceral and good.
Yeah.
That's it for emails.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you everyone for listening. We didn't hit Alan Wake 2 length, but.
Hopefully enjoyable. I feel like it's like a little overwhelming to talk about a game that's so massive and
there's
so much to talk about. And I feel like the moment we stop recording, I'll think of something that
we didn't address.
Talk about. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Cool game.
Yeah. No, I'm glad we played it. I think this has also just been one that I've been wanting to revisit. It's kind of wild that it's been now almost 5 years since I played it for the first time. That seems like deranged. But it is what it is. And we picked a good time that the next one's coming out at some point. So we'll see what that looks like. Yeah. Well, should we do plugs and then sign off here?
What are we doing next time?
Oh, I forget exactly what it's called, but we are doing Fatal Frame.
The Wii one.
The Wii one. And not the 2 remake. The
Mask you know. Of the Lunar Eclipse.
Yeah, which is also a Suda 51 game.
Yeah, which is also a Grasshopper game. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm excited about this one. I'm pumped.
Yeah. There's a Wii version that never got translated, but there's a fan patch.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is the remaster that changes the lighting, but
yeah, but
you can play it on a modern system if you want.
Mm-hmm.
I think they changed the lighting to be more like the Wii U game.
Oh yeah, sure.
But it's largely the same environments. It is just they fucked up the lighting and the character models are weird.
It's really important that the lighting is good though.
Yeah.
It's very important.
Yeah. We have a Patreon if you enjoyed this podcast.
Yeah.
Throw us a dollar to get access to all of our bonus pods.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that. And I will say, and maybe I'll put this up top. We mm-hmm. lowered our payments to a dollar, and that meant that people are not getting charged $3 anymore, which means we like lost half of our
income. Oh, really?
On Patreon. So
I assumed that it would keep everyone at $3. It would just, that's bizarre.
I did not do that. So, hey, if you were comfortable at $3, if you want to change it again, that'd be great. Or tell your friends, share the show, share the pod.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that number hurts to look
at. Oh, wow. That's wild.
Yeah. Feel free to share the show with other folks.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm gonna edit this at the beginning of the show just so people don't wait 2.5 hours for it.
Yeah, totally.
Anyway, spookygame.club is the website that goes to a link tree now that has mm-hmm. all the links you need. You want to send an email, just click on a link. You just want the RSS feed, click on a link. You want to go to Admiral Mapping, there's a link for that. So
yes,
yeah, there's
totally.
there's also a link for your website, Imaginary Engine Review, on there as well.
Oh, great.
And also for the Discord, where we have folks who also like the show and hang out. So
yeah, that's right. Just speaking of tier, Imaginary Engine Review, we have an issue going right now about Hesai Pistol Show. We have a couple things. My co-editor Phoenix wrote about the relationship to like mental health advocacy subcultures in Japan and elsewhere. Ludzu wrote about it as an RPG Maker game, an RPG Maker as kind of a collage patchwork engine that kind of shows its histories and the way it's been used, and that being like an interesting thing that inflects on Hesai Pistol Show's meaning. It is a banger. These are both good pieces. You guys, people should check it out. People should check out that game. It's good. It's got a fan translation on itch. You just download that and play it. You don't have to like download anything else. It's just ready to roll. And yeah, that's also I'm on Blue Sky at Grace Machine. There is a Twitter account at Grace_Machine, but I haven't posted there in 2 months. So there you go.
There you go. All right. Thank you for listening.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, I don't know why I'm saying that to you, but, I mean, people should listen. It's good. It's a good show.
I extremely feel like I'm going to hit stop recording and I'll be like, fuck! I didn't think of this. It sucks. This is the worst feeling in the world to have.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
But what can you do?
Literally, what can you do?
Alright.
Alright. Sayonara.